So we're continuing our study of Sefer Malachim Aleph. We are in the middle of Perek Tazayin, chapter 16, and we are up to Pasuk Tazvav, Pasuk 15, which is pretty much midway through the Perek. And we had discussed previously that we're on a little bit of a journey through the kings of the northern kingdom. There was a stable 41-year reign in the southern kingdom, King Asa, who was Melech Yehuda. So during those 41 years where he was stable in the south, there was really anything but stability in the north. And we had kind of left in a little bit, if you want to call it a cliffhanger, but we left off with there was a second assassination and rebellion taking place within the kingdom in the north. And we were introduced in Pasuk Tes to an individual whose name was Zimri. And Zimri was an officer, an official in the army, and he went ahead and he assassinated the sitting king in the north, who was King Allah, who was the child of Baasha, and almost the same thing had repeated itself, the same way that Yeravam stopped being king, and his son was only king for 2 years, and then his son was assassinated. So now, the next dynasty, the same thing has happened. So we're picking up Pasuk Tezvav, and it introduces to us the monarchy, or the reign of Zimri, and does so in the most unique form of any king, in actually both kingdoms, in the sense that Zimri is going to set the record for shortest reign of a monarch in Jewish history. So we're picking up Pasuk Tezvav. Bishnas Esrim V'sheva Shana La'asa Melech Yehuda. It was in the 27th year of Asa, the king of Yehuda, the king of the south. Malach Zimri reigned Shivas Yomim Betirza for 7 days. His whole kingship was seven days in the city of Tirza. Again, the city of Tirza seems to be the second option in terms of what was the capital of the northern tribes, of the 10 tribes. It started off in Shechem. Then we see a lot of mentioning of Tirza, and it's actually going to be in this parak that we hear about the future capital, which eventually becomes the permanent capital, which is the city of Shomron. Not that eventually there's a whole region of area known as the Shomron, but originally there was a city. So he reigns for 7 days in Tirza. And we're told here something that we mentioned before, V'ha'am chonim al gibson asher laplishtim. Currently, during this 7 day period, during this, and therefore during the what happened right before the 7 days, during his assassination of the sitting king, the rest of the people, namely the army, was currently stationed in Gibson, which is belonging to the Plishtim, that there was some type of military battle, or at least some type of military standoff with the Plishtim. And that's where the army was, while Zimri, who, although at one point in his life he was an active officer in the army, clearly he wasn't with the rest of the army, and that's when he decided to lead his rebellion, which lasted for only 7 days. He is there is a question that we can ask, how do you get to be considered, how do you get to be considered a king? We're about to see that those who were in the army, those who were at this military gathering against the Plishtim, they did not recognize Zimri as king. So who do you need to be recognized as king to be listed as a king? When you look through all the charts in the back of our Nevi'im, we all have these charts, and you could look online and find charts of the kings and which years. So it does list Zimri. Usually it says, seven with like two asterisks, that it's not referring to 7 years or 7 months, but actually seven days. But he is listed as a king. We have no real understanding, or there's no other echoing of who else recognized him as king. Perhaps it's the fact that he went ahead, as the Pesukim mostly recently described, he assassinated the sitting king and got rid of any potential threat. All those relatives of the dynasty that he destroyed, he went ahead and killed. So it's happening when the army is away. We had pointed out last time, and we'll just echo it again this time, that there is some poetic justice, because when the previous dynasty was started by an individual named Baasha, and Baasha carried out his assassination of the house of Yeravam while the army was fighting in against the Plishtim, and maybe that was the inappropriate time to do it, and so there's some type of, you know, justice being paid back that his dynasty is destroyed again when Klal Yisrael is fighting against the Plishtim. So Pasuk Tazayin is, you know, however news travels, word of mouth, Vayishma ha'om hachonim lemor kashar zimri v'gam hicha es hamelech. So the the nation, meaning the army, which is stationed, which is camped against the Plishtim, they hear the rumor that number one, Zimri is kashar. Number one, he's led a rebellion, and it's been so successful, gam hicha es hamelech, he has assassinated the king. And rather than running up north, they decide, who is this guy? Vayamlichu kol Yisrael es Omri sar tzaval Yisrael bayomahu b'machaneh. They went ahead and crowned their own king, kol Yisrael. So presumably we're just talking about the army there. Went ahead and crowned Omri, who was considered to be sar tzava, the officer, maybe the command, the commander of the army, maybe he's the general of the army. Perhaps he has more of a higher position. His military experience is more than Zimri. And they decide to recognize Omri as king, as the king over the north on that day. And they do it in the midst of the camp. So another piece of information that we don't know is what exactly does the rest of the country think? We're not really going to be told fully, but we can presume, based on some future psukim, we can presume that this was purely a military choice as king. And so some of us may be asking the question, you know, why is there so much turmoil? Why is there, so it is we could say that based on the way that they are behaving in terms of their ruchnis, in terms of their spirituality, so they're not really deserving of much, and they're definitely not deserving of having tranquility and peace and having lack of turmoil. We put together, we go back when the time that things were described to be the most tranquil. So that was the time period, the golden years of David and then Shlomo, when the entire country was kind of following what they were supposed to do in terms of their spirituality. So there was a balance and there was a healthy physical protection from enemies and a healthy monarchy. In the absence, in the vacuum of succeeding spiritually, so that politically, it's just a mess. So we have the military recognizing Omri as king, and we have Zimri sitting in the capital city as acting as king, and then we have the rest of the country who we don't even have any indication so far what they think. Apparently, this military campaign is something that was not such a threat. Because we're about to read in Pasuk Yud Zayin, Vayale Omri v'chol Yisrael imo migibson vayatsuru al tirza. They shift gears. They pull back from whatever they were there to do in the Plishtim, which makes it sound like what they were trying to do in the Plishtim was much more offensive than defensive. If they were defending the country against an enemy, then it would be highly irresponsible to go and deal with an internal conflict while there's going to be a threat, perhaps at one of your borders. So you have to, I think we could imagine that it was probably they were on the offensive. Omri makes the decision that it's more important for us to deal with our conflict here in our own country. And so he takes the army with him. Vayala Omri, he goes up, Plishtim are in the south. So he goes up, V'chol Yisrael Imo, Mi Gibson, from the town of Gibson. He's got the whole army with him. Vayatsuru Al Tirza. And now they besiege, they surround the city where Zimri, the current king, is located. So they're clearly trying to deal with it. Now, what Zimri has made the poor decision in terms of, we had pointed out last time that the word kashar, which means rebellion, it refers to a fact that there's a group involved. That you don't start a rebellion by yourself because it's not going to succeed. You need to have a group. It's almost like a rope that's a knotted rope, right? Kashira, so that you have support. He clearly does not have support. The entire army is in the south, and the entire army has now recognized a new king who's not him. So Pasuk Yud Ches Vayihi Kiros Zimri Kinil Kadahair. Zimri sees, he understands, he becomes aware of the fact, Kinil Kadahair, that the city of Tirza has been captured. Vayavo el Armon Beis HaMelech. He goes into the hall of the palace. And here the pasuk is slightly ambiguous because it says Vayisrof Alav as Beis HaMelech Ba'esh Vayamos. And right, so we translate it literally, and he burnt upon him the house of the king in fire, Vayamos, and he died. So the Zimri dies. The fire is set against the palace, and he's smoked out. He is totally, he's killed by this fire. The Mefarshim debate who started the fire. Was it Zimri himself kind of saying, I'm going to lose? And it's not uncommon for someone to, or for a group of people, let alone a leader, to commit suicide rather than, you know, face the embarrassment or the torture, or, you know, you fill in the blank. You go back even to Sefer Shmuel and talk, you know, what when Shaul realized that he was surrounded, and we see what the Plishtim ended up doing to Shaul's body. So we can only imagine what he maybe would have done to his while he was still alive. So therefore it might have been Zimri who decided this is over, and he ends his own life by setting the palace to fire, and he takes his own life. Or the other Mefarshim point out, no, it makes the Omri went ahead, and this was his tactic. He led a rebellion. Not a rebellion. He has the whole army behind him. He's surrounded this capital city. He's got this king who's been only king for 7 days, and at least the army has zero interest in Zimri staying king. So he decided to, you know, set the place on fire. It'll take care of the quote-unquote competition. And he went ahead, and that caused the death of Zimri. The pasuk continues in pasuk Yotes to tell us, you know, why he was almost, it's almost like it, the pasuk is continuing, Vayamos, and he died, you know, once in a while. The end, it almost sounds like we should keep reading. Like, it shouldn't be a stop of a pasuk. It should keep going. It's almost like Vayamos al Chatosav, that he died due to his sins, Asher Chata, that he sinned, Lasos Arab Ein Hashem, to do what was evil in the eyes of Hashem. Now here, we have to, the Mefarshim help us, but we have to read this pasuk, this phrase, differently than we've ever read it before. We've had it time and again, and we'll continue to have, that the kings, specifically in the north, are terrible. Sometimes one is more terrible than the next. And there's this classic formula of, the king did what was bad in the eyes of Hashem, the king followed in ways of Yoram ben Nevat, he also sinned, and he caused Klal Yisrael to sin. So that's the normal, kind of unfortunate party line that exists for all the kings in Israel, in the northern kingdom. Only problem here is that Zimri is only king for 7 days. 3-4 of those days, he's busy assassinating the entire household of the sitting king. It was almost like no time to sin. Lahavdil, we always talk about the by Sukkot time. So the pasuk refers to the first day of Sukkot as the Yom HaRishon, right? We say Lokachtam Lachem by Yom HaRishon. You should take for yourself on the first day the lulav and the esrog. So it was the first day. We know Sukkot is the 15th day. So Chazal have a alternative reading: Rishon Hu Lecheshbon Avonos. It's the first day for you to sin. Meaning, in the context of Yom Kippur, everyone is so busy taking care of building a sukkah, buying the lulav, getting ready. So during those 4 days, there's like no time to sin. Oh, you get to the right, Rishonu l'chaz, now you're relaxed, so you can let your guard down. Hopefully you don't, and everything's great. But, so there was no time for Zimri, right? The pasuk says here, right, the sins that he sinned, lasos harabeini Hashem, to do what was evil in the eyes of Hashem, laleches b'derech Yeravam, to go in the pathway of Yeravam, uvechatoso, and in his own sinning, asher asa, that he, Zimri, did, lahachti es Yisrael, to cause Klal Yisrael to sin. So the two main ways, you can't understand that literally, that while he was king for 7 days, he causes Klal Yisrael to sin. The Radak takes the approach that he was a terrible influence on the people, even during his days of being involved in the military. That when he was this, he had this position of being in charge of half of the chariots, that position was a position of prominence, position of power. It definitely led him to believe that he could lead a rebellion. And it was during that time that he was a bad influence and he caused members of the Jewish people to sin. Or you could also read it, Asher Asa Lahachti Es Yisrael, is in terms of what's the track record here. The track record is that he already was such an individual that had he stayed king, he would have caused the Jewish people to sin. We normally don't punish someone based on what they would do in the future, outside of this, you know, the unique parsha in the Torah known as the Ben Sorer or Morer, the wayward son, which happens to be the Gemara says, you know, an opinion that it maybe never even happened, and it's just there for us to learn from and get schar for learning it. Normally, we don't punish someone al shem ha'asid. What's going to happen? The Torah, this week's parsha is Yishmael. Yishmael and Hagar are out there after Yitzchak is born, and the Medrash says the angels come to God and say, you know, let the boy die here. We'll save a lot of trouble from Yishmael and all his descendants. And Hashem says, no, Basher Husham. He judges Yishmael as is, was a lad who didn't deserve. So to say that Asher Asa Lahachti Yisrael. So first of all, it's not the only thing. I mean, even if you want to take that approach, that's not the only part of Zimri's resume that's causing him to die. Meaning he clearly is someone who does the Rab Einei Hashem, and he's in the pathway of Yeravam, and he obviously did not show God that he was going to be any different than the Israelite kings that came before him. What's mind-boggling, we have hints to this in many of these types of psukim, is that if you're going to lead a rebellion, you're going to take over a previous dynasty, how did the other one fail, and how am I going to succeed? That's like a basic question. And the intelligent individual would realize that the failures came from a spiritual failure, which impacts the physical world, and yet none of them are willing to change. I saw, I don't know who put it out, I was checking something online, one of these charts, it wasn't even a Jewish one, which is, you have to be careful. When you Google Bible things online, you're not always getting the Torah or even Judaism, let alone Orthodox Judaism's approach. So you just have to be mindful of it, because they may be, first of all, talking about a different Bible. So they had a chart of all the kings. I was checking out, I needed to know, for something in school, I needed to know when Chizkiah was king. Okay, so we're not up to it yet, so I don't have it in my head. We have to get there. So I saw this secular chart was the king good at the beginning of his life, or evil at the beginning of his life, and then end of his life? Like, was there any changes? And you look down the line of the Malchus Yisrael, it's evil, 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 evil. There was one king, I forgot which one, well, maybe we'll point it out when we get there, that was good / evil. Only one out of every single one of the dynasty. So no one was ever willing to see what was the failure and change their ways, and Zimri was no different. The Pasuk Chaf, again, continues to be... It's a little bit odd to read this pasuk. You have to say that, I think you have to say that we're trying to have some type of symmetry, that whenever we have a king, we're introduced to the king by telling us, and he became king. What year was it in terms of the other monarchy? How long was this individual king? And at the end of the king's being king, we have this closing pasuk. By the way, all the details are written in the Daily Chronicles. But here, to some extent, it's like comical. Pasuk Chaf, the Yeser Divrei Zimri, the other aspects of Zimri, the Kishro, and his rebellion, Asher Kasher, that he rebelled, Halohim Ksuvim Al Sefer Divra Yamim L'Malchei Yisrael. It's written in the Book of Chronicles of the Kings of Israel. Meaning all the appointments that he had with foreign dignitaries, with 7 days. So I think the idea is that we're trying to have symmetry. We're trying to have that this is the format. And again, maybe there was one or two details that could be put in the Book of Chronicles. Maybe they went into greater detail in terms of the rebellion, who was with him, who was on his team. I mean, he miscalculated. He did not have the support of the military, and anyone can play what they call Monday morning quarterback. Clearly, he made the wrong decision. But maybe some more of the details of his rebellion are listed in the Book of Chronicles. But for us, reading Sefer Malachim, it's not important for us to know more than was stated.
They mentioned it was the same as when it was Sar Tzva. This is the Yeser Divrei.
Uh-huh. And that was written into the Book of Chronicles. So the details of his life, meaning his life accomplishments. So therefore, meaning even his military accomplishments, his previous, you know, again, it was a position of power, some position of authority. So that was written down. It would be a much shorter biography. You know, if you had the school project to do the biography on Zimri, it would be a lot shorter. Lahavdil, I think, I forgot, is it, we have one president of the United States was only president for 1 month or 30, 40 days. Was it Tyler, maybe Tyler? Taylor? One of them, I think. Something. Well, so you have to have a Bakias in the United States. Finally, have to, for the, who was the panoply expert on United States presidents? Yeah, so you have to find. But I think there's one. And you, when you look at the list of presidents, again, it says like asterisk, you know, for 30 days, because it stands out from a list of leaders. We're told something also, again, I think highlighting the sheer political instability of the era. So far, this is the first time, and we'll try to take note. This may be the only time. I didn't double check, so I think the only way for us to double check will be for us to learn through Malachim and try to remember. Pasuk Chaf Aleph, Oz Yechalei Ka'am Yisrael Lachetzi. At this juncture, the people split in half. Chatzi Ha'am Haya Achari Tivni Ben Ginas LeHamlicha. Half of the people went after an individual who we're just being introduced to now for the first time. Tivni, the son of Ginas, to crown him as king. V'hachatzi, and half the country, Achari Omri, went after Omri. So it's not so clear, first of all, is it really half? Sometimes Tanakh can say the word half, and it means half, right? You have to bring a half shekel. It meant there's a coin called a shekel. There's a coin called a half shekel. Bring a half shekel for the census. Here it may have actually been, some of Farshim point out, what we were kind of hinting to, and this may represent that there was a military choice and a common people choice. The military choice was clearly Omri, right? So that's the end of the pasuk saying, V'hachatzi achari Omri. Those in the military, maybe those in the military circle, something of that nature, the military families, they went after Omri. But the majority of the masses, so number one, they never had an opportunity to recognize Zimri as king. And it was never their decision that Omri should be king. So they ended up recognizing a different individual as king, who, in terms of Tanakh, we don't know too much about this individual named Tivni. But basically, for the first approximately 6 years that Omri is king, there are really two kings. There's a king named Omri. There's a king named Tivni. However, all the Mefarshim point out, and you could check your charts in the back of your Tanakh, this Tivni doesn't make it into the list. So Tivni, who's a partial king for like 6 years, does not make it into the list, even though Zimri, who was king for seven, did. And either you explain something along the lines of, well, since he was never recognized as king over all the 10 tribes, and Omri will be very, you know, 6 years later, so we don't list, or perhaps this is, I guess, slightly intriguing, that Omri, you know, it could have been something that Omri mandated, that after he becomes king, never to allow Tivni to be recognized as a king. But for 6 years, there are two kings in the northern kingdom, or two people acting as king, and so technically we have three monarchs in Israel, because we have the southern kingdom, who's still under the you have to imagine the people living in the land of Yehuda. They read the, you know, Northern Kingdom Post. This is like why it's like why it's like. It, I mean, maybe it's like, you know, maybe how some countries look at us. But the, you know, when you see political turmoil and you have it nice and normal, so the contrast is just so great. So there were three kings. You have Asa in the south. You have Tivni. Again, we don't hear about this pseudo government. Where was it? In terms of Tanakh itself, I didn't see any Mefarshim even tell us, you know, which tribe was this Tivni from? Was it two tribes? Was Omri from one tribe and Tivni from another tribe? I don't know if your, you know, if your Tanakh says it, you know, feel free to.
Did he create his own military?
Did he create his own military? If he didn't create his own military, how did he last so long? Did it ever end? We're going to have the Mefarshim are going to debate. Did it ever end in some aspect of rebellion or military or attack? You know, so I think we're forced to kind of come back to, you know, pause, realize this is Sefer Malachim being written by Yirmiyahu 300 years after this, or 250 years after this. And for those 6 years, the fact that they were two different monarchs, it's just not important. It's not, you know, we're not hearing all of the details. We're not hearing, you know, what was Tivni's capital city, and how did it function? We just read, right, it seems to flow, Pasuk Chav Beis, Vayechazak ha'am asher acharei Omri, es ha'am asher acharei Tivni ben Ginas. The people who followed Omri were stronger, prevailed over the people who followed Tivni. But it was not immediate. The Pasuk makes it sound like it's immediate. The Mefarshim tell us it was like 6 years. And the Pasuk ends, Pasuk Chav Beis ends, Vayamas Tivni, Vayimloch Omri. Tivni died, and Omri became king. So the Mefarshim are split. The Radak says two approaches himself. He says number one is Misas Atzmo. Tivni died. Tivni naturally died. And once he died, so then it made sense. Right now there's a debate who should be king. The greatest way to solve the debate is one of them just drops dead. And if one of them got sick, went natural causes, so now there's no machloka. So the whole country should now recognize Omri. And that's what happened. Radak quotes a different approach that Omri, either not necessarily Omri, but the people themselves assassinated Tivni, because something significant happened, something that we'll have to talk about, and maybe you'll be left with a bit more of a question than an answer, is that there was a royal marriage, at least once, between the southern kingdom and the northern kingdom, where Asa's son, Yehoshaphat, who's going to be the next king, at least as one of his wives, was the daughter of Omri. So if you have these two kings, these two people vying for kingship, Omri and Tivni, and one of them is selected to marry into the southern kingdom, that kind of raises the stock of Omri. And if it raises the stock of Omri, people said, let's get rid of Tivni. And so, Vayamas Tivni, Vayimloch Omri, may be something that was more active as opposed to passive, where they assassinated Tivni. I think we could all say that if it was a true assassination, the Tanakh clearly has shown that it has descriptive ways, not just Vayamos. Vayamos is person passes away. When it's a rebellion, it's Vayikshar, and it's more Hika, it's more like active. You would probably say the burden of proof in terms of text of the Psukim is on those who say it was a rebellion to prove that it was a rebellion. It seems that the natural pshat is much more towards just that Tivni died. And you read the Pasuk, the fact that it started, there are two halves of the Pasuk. The first half of the Pasuk is how Vayechazak ha'am, how the side that followed after Omri prevailed over the side that followed after Tivni. And then at the end of the Pasuk says, Vayamas Tivni v'imlech Omri. You read it together. Why did the side of Omri prevail over Tivni? It was all, you could read the Pasuk as everything was peaceful. Because Tivni died, and now there's no competition. So the side that was for Omri said, come along, let's all recognize Omri as king. And that's what they do. Pasuk Chaf Gimel. So now that it's been a number of years after Omri was quasi-king, so now we could be introduced to him as a proper king, as the proper way to introduce a monarchy. We couldn't do that before because he's not ruling over the entire northern kingdom. So Pasuk Chaf Gimel, Bishnah Shloshim V'Achas Shana, it was in the 31st year, La'asa Melech Yehuda, to Asa, the king of Yehuda. So he's still going strong. We had said that Asa was king in the south for 41 years, so he's in his, you know, he's 75% way done, but it's still very, very stable. One monarchy, we're up to king number, I think it's four, in the northern kingdom during the same time span. So it was during that year, Malach Omri al Yisrael, 12 Shana. Omri becomes king over Klal Yisrael for 12 years. B'tirtza Malach Sheshanim. And in Tirtza, it was 6 of those years took place in the city of Tirtza. And again, we are pointing out, Tirtza seems to be the second capital city. The issue is that Tirtza was heavily damaged by Omri himself. Omri destroyed the palace. Right, the place that he has the most interest in is the palace. But he assassinated the previous king, Zimri, by setting fire to the palace. And so the current capital city, number one, is damaged goods. And number two, it's not his. It's not his city. And so it appears one of the major accomplishments that we read about here in Malachim is the establishment of the city of Shomron, which becomes his capital city and also becomes the capital city of the northern kingdom for the next couple of, 200 some odd years until the northern kingdom is no longer. It becomes the third and final. Right, the Havdil in American history. They talk, right? The capital city, I think, at one point is maybe Philadelphia. At one point it was New York. And then, okay, Washington, D.C. is chosen, and then it stays, three times the charm. So this is the third one is Shomron. So how does it come about? Pasuk Chav Dalet. Vayiken es ha-har Shomron me'es shemer b'kikrayim kasef. So Omri purchases a mountain, the mountain of Shomron, from a man named Shemer for a certain price, 2 kikars of kesef. Vayiven asahar, he builds up the har. Vayikra shem ha'ir asher bana al shem Shemer Adonai ha'har Shomron. So he calls the city after this Shemer, who was the original owner of the area, and therefore he calls this whole har, the city, Shomron. The Mefarshim debate whether or not the city actually kind of existed as a city beforehand, and he enhanced it. But he clearly brought Shomron to be a city of prominence, and this is where he moved his capital to. And that's really the only "quote unquote" accomplishment that we read about Omri. Pasuk of Hey, Vayas Omri Hara Beinei Hashem, no different. Omri did what was evil in the eyes of Hashem. Vayara Mikol Asher Lefanav, he gets the catchphrase that he was more bad, more evil from everyone who came before him. Perhaps some of the Farshim explain he gets that phrase because, again, anytime there's a change in dynasty where you're no longer dealing with anytime you have a new king, the new king can make a decision to change ways. We're going to see that in the kingdom in the south, where in Malchus Yehuda, there are going to be times that the father was a Rasha and the son was a Tzaddik. The father who was a king was terrible. And the son, when we say, the apple didn't fall. No, the apple sometimes falls very far from the tree. And then unfortunately, we have other ways where the son is a Tzaddik and the next son is terrible. So each new king is an opportunity for a new path, for not following down this spiritual, hole. But when there's a new dynasty, that's even stronger. That's an even more of an opportunity. So perhaps Vayara Mikola Sharlofanov is because Omri, this was an opportunity. This was a great opportunity. You've gone away from the dynasty of Yeravam is over. The dynasty that punished the house of Yeravam, which should have been better, is also over. Zimri, okay, the 7 days, that's just a fluke. That's over. Now you're new. And you want to even say, you want to take the civil conflict, the fact that there were two kings into account? Fine, take that into account. Now you are a new, full recognized king over all the northern kingdom. It should be different, and it wasn't. So that the way the Tanakh describes that maybe is Vayara Mikol Asher Lefanav. He was even worse. We'll see. His son's going to do him one better, unfortunately. Vayelach b'chol derech Yerav ben Nevat. He went all of the pathway of Yerav ben Nevat. Uvechataso and his own sinning, Asher Hechti is Yisrael, and he causes Klal Yisrael to sin. Lahaches es Hashem Elokei Yisrael behavlehem, to cause anger to anger Hashem, the God of the Jews, the God of Israel, with their vanities, with their nothingness. Pasuk of Zion, V'yeser Divrei Omri Asher Asa Ugvuraso Asher Asa. So we have an extra phrase which has meaning, right? The other details of Omri that he did, and the might that he did. That he was, well, clearly he was the Sar Tzava. He was the commander of the army. But this is implying that during his time as king, there were some military, might. Halohem ksuvim al sefer adivrei yamim l'malchi Yisrael. Is it not written into the book of the daily chronicles of the kings of Yisrael. It's pointed out by many, and this is, you know, you're welcome, you know, if you want a reading on your own. So there was in the 1860s a very famous archaeological find. I'm not sure how to pronounce it 100%. The Mesha stone, which is a Moabite stone, which talks about a king from Moab named Chemosh, or the Avodah Zarah Chemosh, and it mentions a mighty king in Israel. The only name it mentions is Omri. So this is in case you need some proof, it mentions eventually the tablet, I believe, talks about the fact that Israel will take revenge against this Omri, and Moab kind of was victorious. Believes at one point Omri was very victorious against Moab, and maybe that's what when we say here when it's talking about Ugvura Soasharasa, he had might. So again, he was even recognized, you know, internationally recognized as a man of might. I imagine there's more meaning in terms of the archaeological find. If you're interested, you know, you can Google it like I can. I'm sure there have to have been books written about that find as well. In Patzach Chavches, Vayishkav Omri im Avosav. So Omri passes away, he dies. Vayikaver b'Shomron, he's now buried in his city, right? His capital city, the city of Shomron. Vayimloch Achav b'no Tachtav. His son Achav becomes king in his place. And Achav ends up perhaps being after Yeravim ben Nevat, perhaps the most famous of the kings of the northern kingdom. Achav together with his wife Izebel, as we're going to see, and the Tanakh devotes perhaps we'll see so far definitely you know in terms of starting from Yeravim and going down devotes some of the most time in terms of Sukkim and attention to the time period of Achav as king. A lot of it has to do with Achav, and a lot of it has to do with who Achav interacted with, namely the Nevi'im that he interacted with. So Omri is his impact on Klal Yisrael seems to fail in comparison into that of his son. So we pick up Pasuk Chavtes. The Achav ben Omri, Malach Al Yisrael, Bishnas Shloshim Ushmona Shana La'asa Melch Yehuda. Achav, the son of Omri, ruled over Yisrael in the 38th year that Asa was king in Yehuda. So if you're doing the math, so we had that just in Pasuk Chaf Gimel, we were told that Omri became king during the 31st year, and this is only 7 years later. So that's where you work with 5 or 6 years of the time that Omri wasn't recognized as king doesn't get added into this accounting, but when we say that he was king for 12 whole years, that meant even the time that he was when he was fighting, you know, in terms of there was a debate in terms of who was the proper king. So we're now in the fifth king in the time period of Asa. It's the 37th year of Asa. So Asa is going to be alive, as we're about to say, for just a few years of Achav's reign. Vayimloch Achav ben Omri al Yisrael. Achav, the son of Omri, rules over Yisrael. B'Shomron, in Shomron. He's continuing the tradition to have the capital city in Shomron. Esther Mushtaim Shana, 22 years. So he's going to go much further, right? He's only, right, for the first 4 years of his life, Asa is going to be king. For the last 18 years, there'll be a different king, starting with Yehoshaphat, but we don't circle back to that until right. The baton has been passed. With Achav, we're going past the years of there being a king in the southern kingdom. So what the Tanakh does is it will now stick with Achav until Achav's end, and then pick back up the history in Perachav Beis a couple of chapters from now, going back to the southern kingdom. Pasuk Lamed. Vayas Achav ben Omri hara b'enei Hashem. Doesn't waste any time. Achav, the son of Omri, did what was evil in the eyes of Hashem. Mikol asher lefanav. And again, we're saying worse than who came before him. Right? And if it wasn't, you know, if it wasn't Tanakh, sometimes you would maybe say, like, how could we believe? This person's described as the word. And like always, lahavdil, because we're talking about Tanakh. There's one of the radio shows that I sometimes listen to when I'm stuck in traffic. Says like we're back and better than ever. Every year, back and better. No, how do you? I don't know. It can't always be. You know, I don't like that. It can't. Maybe yesterday was actually better. You know, so. Pasuk keeps saying over again, you know, this is the worst we ever had. Because Ashar, okay, it's Tanakh, so we have to take it that it's obviously true. And here, the Tanakh goes out of its way to kind of show that it was different. And perhaps the phrase Mikol Ashar Lefanav asks us to read the next pasuk and try to look for ways that it was different. Pasuk Lamed Aleph, Vayihi. Hanakel lechto bechatos yirav benavat. The thing, right? The art scroll translation is the least of his evil deeds was going in the way of Yeravam benavat. The least worst thing that he did was to be like Yeravam. He went worse though than that. Vayikach isha es Izebel bas es Baal melech Sidonim. Achav took for a wife, at least one of his wives, and what it's going to appear to be his main wife. Her name was Izebel. She's the daughter of Esbal, who was a king in Sidon, which means that she was not Jewish. And there's no indication that she converted or tried to convert. And it would have been impossible. It would have been impossible to convert. He's an Oved Avodah Zarah, Achav. She's an Ovedes Avodah Zarah. And, you know, that, you know, you can't really convert to Jew. You know, you can't really, Chazal teach us that if a person says they're ready to convert to Judaism, but there's just one mitzvah, the mitzvah of mezuzah, they can't handle that. They just can't handle, you know, they like paint being straight. They can't handle knocking something into the wall. So if they say it like that, you're not allowed to accept them. It doesn't have to be that a person who converts has to know every single law. They have to be willing to keep all the laws that they're made aware of. But if they say outright, we're ready to take 612 and not 613, they're not allowed to convert. So usually the normal process is that part of the conversion is you have to give them a conversion course so they know what they're doing. And then right before they get converted, they get asked questions. Some of the strict laws, some of the lenient laws, so, you know, whatever is a strict law, Shabbos, whatever is a lenient law, mezuzah, what are you willing to do? So you have to imagine that during a time period where Avodah Zarah is on people's minds, that Avodah Zarah is up there. There's no attempt to say that she converted, which makes it, again, the fact that we said that the previous pasuk ended in the phrase Mikol Asher Lefanav, anything that's before him. So I think, you can correct me if you think otherwise, I think this is the first time we see one of the kings of the Malchus Yisrael specifically marrying out. It happens to be we don't hear much about their wives. As opposed to in the Malchus Yehuda, we always hear about who the king's mother was. We always hear about when we're introduced to a new king, we know who his father is. His father's the previous king. But he's always identified who his mother was. Once you know who his mother was, you know who's at least one of the previous queens by just math. So, you know, that's a good question. Why do the wives of the Malchus Yisrael not seem to play such a role? So it could very well be that other kings who are not such well-behaved individuals, whether it was Basha, whether it was Zimri, whether it was Omri, that perhaps they also married out of the faith. But this is the first one that's being described to us. So we could you could put forward the theory that Achav was first. So the fact that he's going, which means that the next king, if there's a dynasty to continue, the next king of Israel won't be Jewish. That you could say that's taking it further. What's also is that her father's name is described as Esbal, which the Mefarshim debate, was it actually his name or does it circle around the Avodah Zarah Baal, and that it was such an allegiance to the Avodah Zarah of Baal, that she is described as a daughter of Baal, that she is so devoted to the Avodah Zarah of Baal, that's how she described, and she was also one of the daughters of the king of Sidon, of Sidon, a kingdom to the north. And the pasuk continues, "Vayelach vayavod es habal." This Achav, he went and he worshipped Baal. Ve'ishtachvu lo, he bowed down to him. Some of the Mefarshim talk about how he had gone, first had gone north. He had gone to Izebel's hometown of Sidon, and he worshipped in the, he worshipped to Baal there. And as the next pasuk described, he brings Baal to Eretz Yisrael proper. And so why is this taking it worse? Because Yeravam worshipped the golden calves that he set up. They were the original intention was that they should be a conduit to kind of worship Hashem. It quickly spiraled into Avodah Zarah, which happens to be how Avodah Zarah began to begin with. The Rambam in the beginning of Hilchos Avodas Kochavim, the laws of Avodah Zarah, gives us the world history, that originally they looked to the sun and the stars as intermediaries, and it spiraled out, and by the time they got to the generation of the flood, it was Avodah Zarah all over the place. Yeravam worshipped Avodah Zarah, but it was more local. And even the Asherah trees, which is Avodah Zarah, it's less offensive. To bring in a foreign Avodah Zarah, to bring in Baal, which wasn't native to the land, that was considered to be, perhaps, that's part of Achav's resume of being more, you know, more worse than even his father, who's described as worse than what came before. Pasuk Lamed Beis. Vayakam mizbeach labal, he erected a mizbeach for the Avodah Zarah Baal, base habal asher bana b'shomron. So the Mefarshim say, Mitzudas David, others say that maybe it is missing a letter beis, that it should be bibes habal asher bana b'shomron, that he established an altar to Baal in the temple of Baal, the house of Baal, some type of Avodah Zarah temple that he built in his new capital city. So now the crowning achievement of his capital city is a temple of Avodah Zarah to this foreign Avodah Zarah that is from his wife's land. That's not enough. Pasuk Lamed Gimel. Vayas Achav es ha'asherah. Achav went ahead and made an Asherah tree, which is more of a different type of Avodah Zarah that had existed in the land up until now. Vayosef Achav lasos. Achav continues to do, he added even more, Lahachas Hashem Elokei Yisrael, to anger Hashem, the God of Israel, Mikol Malchei Yisrael Shahu Lefanav, than any other king that was king before him. Clearly, as we're going to try to explain next time, clearly the patience of Hashem, the Erech HaPayim, the fact that God has not punished the nation and has only punished the kings themselves. So when we say that God is slow to anger, he's really slow. He's really slow. He's really slow, low to anger. Until now, it's really only been the kings that, and again, even the kings, they get some time before they get their punishment. This is kind of we're laying the groundwork for the time period of Achav as king. And we're told about one last kind of piece of laying that groundwork of how he did worse than everyone, with what appears to be a random story in Pasuk Lamed Dalet. This will be our last Pasuk today. Biyamav, in his days, meaning in Achav's days, Bana Chiel Beis Ha'eli Es Yericho. There was someone from Beis El. Beis El was one of the cities in the north. His name is Chiel, and he built up the original town of Yericho. Be'aviram bechoro yisada, with Aviram, his firstborn, he set the foundation. Ubisguv tziiro hitziv delaseha, and with Seguv, his youngest, he set up the doors. Kidvar Hashem asher diber biyad Yoshua ben Nun, like the word of Hashem that was spoken to Yoshua ben Nun. So the Chazal and the Mefarshim explain the details of this. Yericho was the town in Eretz Canaan that was the first town that, right after, first or the second? Yericho is the first, right? Yericho, then Ai. Yericho comes first. It's captured in a miraculous way. And in order to remember the miracle of how Yericho and the walls of Jericho were, everyone had thought the walls were impenetrable. In order to remember that event, Yoshua made an everlasting cherem, an everlasting kind of curse over the town of Jericho, A, not to take from the spoils of Jericho, and B, not to rebuild the very spot of Jericho, or even to name another city Jericho, and that if you would do it, your children would die, and your old, even with this phrasing, that your oldest child would die when you set the foundation, and your youngest child and your children would continue to die, and your youngest child would die when you went ahead and finished the doors at the end of the project. This Chiel, living in a time period of Achav, said to himself, and maybe Achav was even encouraging you, perhaps, as we'll point out, they knew each other, they were friends, that Achav said, look, it says that the Torah talks about terrible punishments if the land is full of idol worship. Ha, my era, the land is full of more idol worship than ever, and we're doing fine. So clearly, whatever God, whatever curses God says, they're meaningless. So Chiel went ahead and said, okay, that means I could build up Jericho, because the curses didn't come to you, the curses are not going to come to me. What's wild is that this Chiel continues the project. After Aviram, his eldest, when he established it, and he keeps losing children, he keeps going with the building project, and went ahead and took place exactly as Hashem spoke to Yoshua ben Nun. So, Be'ez Hashem, next time, we'll continue to understand why is this the last story, kind of in the background, background of the time period of Achav, before, as you already see, coming attractions, Pasuk Yud Zayin, we're introduced finally to the famous Eliyahu HaNavi.